Next on NPR's From the Top.
I've heard that you guys don't work on very many scales, which is shocking to me.
Yes.
Against everything I've ever heard, so tell me about that.
You promised this wasn't going to be an expose, but you've already found my Achilles heel. Yes, I don't have a huge fondness for the etude repertoire.
Me neither.
It's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from Mixon Hall at the Cleveland Institute of Music, our lineup of outstanding musicians includes an 11-year-old pianist performing one of the Transcendental Etudes by Franz Liszt, and, as you just heard, a talk with one of the most prominent violin teachers in the country about teaching talented kids. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you very much for that decidedly Cleavish welcome. We come to you this evening from the magical land of Cleves, Cleveland, Ohio. We've been looking so forward to coming and doing a show in Cleveland. For me, mostly because it's a home game. I live here. But in addition to that selfish reason, we wanted to come to Cleveland to do a show because this is one of America's greatest cities for classical music. I mean, we've had tons of kids on our show who study and have grown up here in Cleveland, Ohio. And we're here to celebrate the opening of a beautiful, brand new hall. Thanks for that privilege to our wonderful and gracious hosts, the Cleveland Institute of Music. A great honor for us to be here with you. And we're going to put this crispy new hall through its paces, a serious workout with some kids we think are totally up to the challenge. And four of the kids on this program are studying right here at the Cleveland Institute of Music Preparatory Division, including our first performer. Please welcome from nearby Strongsville, Ohio, 15-year-old violinist Elena Merrimy. So, Elena, welcome to the program. What for this maiden voyage of the illustrious Mixon Hall are we going to be sending out on the airwaves?
We will be playing the Beethoven Spring Sonata, first movement.
When you are set at center stage, we will take it from the top.
Thank you.
Our violinist for Beethoven's Spring Sonata comes to us from nearby Strongsville, Ohio. She's 15-year-old Elena Merrimy. I really appreciate how you bring the drama of all the juxtaposition, the soft and the loud, and the dramatic changes that Beethoven writes in the piece that you don't shy away from. That was really a very enjoyable collaboration.
Thanks
Elena. You've literally grown up here at the Cleveland Institute.
Yeah.
From, say, what age?
Like from conception, pretty much. I've been here since before I was born. My mom and dad both studied for their undergrad here at CAM. They got married in their sophomore year and had me when they were 21. And so for the first year of my life, I was basically carted around university circle in the baby backpack. Mm-hmm. And I went to all the classes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. So you started out in the prenatal division of the Cleveland Institute.
Yep.
And now here you are studying at the preparatory division with one of the legendary teachers available here at the Institute, Paul Cantor.
Paul Cantor, yeah. He's just an awesome teacher. One of the things I really like about him, actually, is like over the years, he's tried to get me to like bring my own ideas out in the music. He doesn't force his own opinions or interpretations on you, which a lot of other teachers do, I think. He lets you say what you want to say in the music.
Mm-hmm. He's getting you to stand on your own two feet interpretively,
and so you can
look at a piece of music and decide what you want to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very generous man. I mean, we've been hearing so much about Paul Cantor for years because he's so loved by so many of the kids who have appeared on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Our 15-year-old roving reporter and a violinist herself, Chailey Smith, listened to one of your lessons with Paul after she'd had a lesson with him herself.
You know what I would pay a little bit more attention to? This was gorgeous. These three words. Actually, it's two words, but one of them is repeated. Poco a poco.
Yeah.
Okay? That's sort of the message I wanted to suggest to you, that the idea that these things happen gradually. And sometimes if you sort of deny us the accelerando for a longer period of time, when it actually happens, it's much more exciting.
Yeah.
Okay.
First, Mr. Cantor, let's talk about Elena. What do you like about her as a student?
Elena is so unbelievably normal when you meet her the first time. And yet, inside that normal facade is this incredibly sophisticated musician.
Mm.
There's such a focus and concentration as if you're hearing someone who's been playing the violin for 50 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I appreciate both sides, the great sophistication
and the
fact
that
she's so
normal.
She's
a normal kid, yeah.
Yeah. Excellent, Elena. So it's the seventh part of that that's the interesting stuff. The A is like ho hum. Okay. Just start. Adam will find you. He's great at that. Da dee da da dee da.
I've heard that you guys don't work on very many scales, which is shocking to me.
Yes.
Against everything I've ever heard, so tell me about that.
You promised this wasn't going to be an expose, but you've already found my Achilles heel. Yes, I don't have a huge fondness for the etude repertoire.
Me neither.
Yeah.
But you're a teacher, so it should be different. But tell us why.
Be.
Yeah.
Well, look, there's nothing magical about an etude. An etude is a collection of notes and patterns. And guess what? So is Bach, and so is Paganini, and so is Tchaikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that very often, you know, when people play the Tchaikovsky concerto, they have a standard for how they want that to sound. They have it in their ear from hearing Milstein and Perlman and Vengerov. And they aim and aspire to that. And somehow when they play an etude, they don't have the same high standard.
Yeah.
And as I like to say, there is no magic in the etude. It's all about how you approach it. And, you know, if you approach the technical stuff in the Tchaikovsky concerto with a great standard and with great listening, I think you get as much benefit as if you grind through a bunch of boring etudes.
So one thing you're really famous for, and I had a lesson with you earlier today, and it's something that I'd heard about and also I experienced firsthand, which that you're very famous for some really funny and very helpful metaphors using to describe music that your students are playing. One of my personal favorites is play like a baby elephant in a pink tutu, which someone told me that you wrote on their music, and I thought that was hilarious. And in the lesson with you today, I'm trying to remember what you said. You used the terms good and bad cholesterol to describe my playing and how to improve it. So I thought that was really great. How did you, like, come up with this style, or how did you, like...
I can't say that I remember the baby elephant pink tutu one, and I have no idea what it means, but I'm sure there was something there at some
the time.
Point. Yeah. I think the idea with the metaphors is that music, for me, is the most abstract of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is, if you can take someone from something that they know, that is very familiar to them, that they understand and that they know, and use that as the basis for describing something that is abstract,
yeah, exactly.
It makes the connection. I think what we were talking about with the silly cholesterol mm-hmm. idea is that we were talking about tension, if I remember.
Yes,
right?
Correct. Yeah.
And I think the suggestion was that physical tension that makes your arms tired and hurt and give you tendonitis is not a good thing, but musical tension where the notes have kind of a magnetic attraction to each other is a good kind of tension. Okay, well, where else do we find good and bad of the same thing? And so the idea of cholesterol came to mind.
That's brilliant. I think that's a really
good
way.
It's hardly brilliant. But, you know, I think very often a lesson is a little bit like creating jazz. Like you're improvising all the time. And for me, the lessons that are the most fun and usually the most successful are where something just occurs to me as an association that might be useful to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the silly metaphors. Yes! Good.
Wow, Chaley got some really great stuff out of Paul. I wish he taught piano. He sounds like a brilliant man. And quoting all the good sources, I'm not sure whether the tutu'd elephant came from Walt Disney's Fantasia or the Flintstones. I'm not, either one of them would qualify as a great source, but it must be a great experience studying with this man. Yeah. Elena, great playing that Beethoven, opening the program with you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elena. Elena Marame, 15-year-old violinist from nearby Strongsville, Ohio.
Like Elena, so many From the Top musicians are doing amazing outreach activities in their home communities. Learn more at our website, fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our next performer joins us from Chicago. Please welcome 16-year-old percussionist Joshua Jones. Joshua, you've brought one of my own personal favorite solo marimba pieces. Tell everybody what it's going to be.
I'm going to be playing Rhythm Song by Paul Smadbeck.
Rhythm Song by Paul Smadbeck, played on the marimba for us by 16-year-old percussionist Joshua Jones from Chicago, Illinois. Joshua, what I like so much about the way you perform that piece is the foreground and background, I mean, the dynamic range that you have, and in particular in this hall where you can really hear a pin drop. The intensity never flags, no matter how soft or how loud you get. It's right there all the time. It's just a seamless, you know, a thread that's never broken.
Yeah.
Extraordinary performance. Hey, Joshua, listen to this. Excerpt from The Lion King.
Yeah.
And this music has a very personal connection to you. Tell us.
Yes, when I was a kid, I used to watch Lion King a lot, and one night I was just sleeping, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was just thinking about the movie and how the part when his father dies, when he was trying to wake him up, and I just started crying afterwards. So that's what really got me connected with music, the emotion it has. Mm-hmm. I try to bring that out as I play pieces, like different pieces, like concertos or rhythm song, like you just heard me play. Back when I was in Interlochen, and my conductor, he used to tell us, you're serving music, you're showing people how you feel from the music you play. You have to use like dynamics. It's not just what's on the page. You have to improvise.
You have to connect with the music.
Yeah, you have to connect
with it.
That's what
puts it across. How about this one? That's either from Andrew Lloyd Webber's Requiem. No, it's Mozart's Requiem. It's just. What's the connection for you between the Mozart Requiem?
Let's see. When I was a kid, my sisters and I used to play this game called Beanie Baby Land. We would make skits with different types of toys. So I just made this skit where our toy Goofy actually turns evil whenever he hears Mozart's Requiem.
Sort of the Disney version of the Manchurian Candidate. As goofy as George Clooney or something.
Yeah.
Here's another one. I don't recognize that one. Tell everybody what that is.
That's Fred Hammond's This Is the Day from Free Your Worship. Yeah.
I haven't been paying attention. That's gospel music, right?
Yep.
Sounds like it's got a little bit of Zydeco or ska or hip hop or all kinds of stuff. Am I right?
Fred Hammond is really intricate in his music. It's always intricate with him. He uses different like R&B beats to get the crowd really motivated, get connected with the music.
Oh, turning me on to that. That's great. You're a musician at your church?
Yes,
right?
Yes, I am. So, I'm the second percussionist there. I play drum set and congas there. Yeah.
Great. And you're the only marimba player who plays gospel.
Well, maybe not the only one.
And you play a little piano there, too, I think?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Good for you.
I'm not really good.
Oh, I bet you are. All right, one final excerpt of music. Now, you know the guys who play in this ensemble.
Yeah, this is a percussion scholarship group from Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I play with the percussion scholarship group back home. Yeah, it's a free program. It's basically they take fourth graders to 12th graders and put them through a process of percussion, how they learn percussion, starting with the snare drum to marimba, as you've seen. It's a really intense program. You have to study for a long time. And when we have concerts, we usually practice Saturday and Sunday for about 12 hours each. So
that's motivated.
Yeah. That's a lot of discipline, too.
Got to be connected to your music to have that kind of devotion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've actually had some kids from the ensemble before, and now it's just fantastic having you join that crowd of alums from Chicago. And the Smadbeck was a fantastic performance.
Thank
really
you.
Enjoyed that. Thank you, Joshua, for being with us.
Thank you.
Joshua Jones, 16 years old, from Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back to the Radio Showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're broadcasting from Mixon Hall at the Cleveland Institute of Music. Coming up, an outstanding young trombonist from Kentucky, and we'll spend an imaginary day in the adult life of an 11-year-old pianist from Pennsylvania. From the Tops Homes, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's program from the Cleveland Institute of Music is made possible with support from Judson at University Circle and WCLV 104.9 FM. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. On From the Top, we've definitely had our share of sibling performers, but the trio up next is definitely one of the most exciting. They are from Shaker Heights, Ohio, right next door, and they're also all students here at the Cleveland Institute of Music's Preparatory Division. We've got Alexandra Hoops, 15 years old, and her brother Chad, 13, play the violins, and Anna Hoops, 17 years old, is our violist. Please welcome the Playing Hoops Trio. Anna is at the mic, and Anna, shouldn't it be the Playing Hoopses, or, I mean, the name is Hoops, plural would be Hoopses, or Hoopsi, or...
or take
heaps,
your pick.
Heaps? No?
We just usually go by Hoops.
Okay. Why don't you tell us what the three of you are going to play together?
We'll be playing for you tonight the Serenade for Two Violins and Viola, the first movement, Allegramente, by Zoltán Kodály. You love it.
Can't wait to hear it.
Thank you.
The Playing Hoops Trio, all hoops kids from the family in neighboring Shaker Heights, Ohio. Chad, 13 years old, Alexandra, 15, and Anna, 17. Their coach is another member of the great faculty here at Cleveland Institute of Music, Annie Foulard. Such a great sense of style. The Hungarian music is so, so exciting. And is it true, though, I noticed Chad, you know, I know Chad to be a real virtuoso, and I he's playing second violin on this, right? He's not totally focused. You have to keep him occupied, right? What is he doing when he's not playing all that stuff that's really, you know, requiring his full attention?
Well, sometimes he goes off in his own little world and just kind of, like, especially in the second movement, he has, like, tremolo, and so he just kind of just lays back and, like, does that, and then also he, like, looks at us and gives us the look of, oh, what did you do wrong? What you need to do better?
So guilt, and does he try and crack you up and
yeah, and then there's been times when he's just made us burst out laughing at performance. It's been hilarious.
He's got an impish look to him. Sort of mischievous. Now, I'm going to ask you to talk about something in order to help other teenagers. Alex, you're a cell phone addict in recovery. Isn't that
correct?
Yeah,
unfortunately. And it's been a pretty long path, actually.
Is it text messaging? Is it actual phone calls?
It's actually just talking on the phone. I think it was 3 months ago. I went over like $180. And of course, my parents go, you're going to pay for that. I was like, sort of low on the cash right now.
Yeah, a little short. Uh-huh.
So it didn't really work. But so they told me if you don't stop talking on the phone so much, you know, we're going to have to take your phone
away. And she'd use my phone.
Oh, I see.
I'd use his phone, the sweet guy that he is, you know. Yeah.
Because she'd have her phone taken away, and she'd be like, Chad, I got to use your phone.
She's jonesing for your phone.
Come into his room 11 o'clock at night.
And then when she got her phone back, you know, my parents were like, okay, now you got to cut down on minutes, like, major. So she'd be in her bedroom, like, at night when we were doing homework and stuff, and she'd answer the phone. It would ring. I'm like, oh no, she's gonna be in major trouble. Mm-hmm. So she answers the phone. She's like, okay, I can only talk for 2 minutes, so let's talk.
I do that.
So it worked out.
Yeah.
And Chad probably got some great digits, am I right? And Alex? I mean, did you come through it? You know,
yeah,
not,
I did.
Not
I've
quite
recovered,
so addicted.
Fully recovered. Mm-hmm. No, over 10 minutes.
She's been counting her minutes very well.
And Chad, I mean, face it, you're a rock star. You're 15 minutes of fame. I was at the post office this morning. I said, do you know who I'm playing with tonight? Have you ever seen that kid on the Cleveland Indians commercial? The one who plays the violin. He said, yeah, everybody knows you. tell everybody about that.
Okay. Well, earlier in the summer, around May, I was invited to play at a Boy Scout convention because I'm a Boy Scout, and the owner of the Cleveland Indians and the director of the commercials and everything, they were there. And after the conference, they came up to me and they said, you know, would you like to make a commercial for the Indians for this upcoming season?
And so, I mean, you can probably see it on YouTube. I mean, there's wonderful footage of hitters and, you know, and great plays being made, and there you are, you know, looking every bit the athlete that they are. It looks really, really good. I
want
to know who your PR person is. I can really use that kind of thing.
Me too.
Anyhow, it's only the beginning of great things for you and the whole family. I mean, it's just been so wonderful hanging out with you, and the great energy you've lent the whole proceeding here at Mixon Hall, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Playing Hoops Trio from Shaker Heights, Ohio, are Hoops siblings, Chad, 13, Alexandra, 15, and Anna, 17. So let's meet this 11-year-old pianist Joanne mentioned from Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, and a recipient of one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards. Please welcome Daniel Song. Daniel, we're so excited about welcoming you to the program and to play this extraordinary piece that you've prepared. Tell everybody what it's going to be.
Well, I'm going to play the Liszt Transcendental Etude No. 7, and it's very exciting and energetic, and there's hard-hitting parts and soft parts, and the transitions are exciting and interesting, and overall, it's a pretty good piece. Yeah.
I agree with you, Daniel. It's got a good beat, good dance to it. It's a pretty good piece. Mm-hmm. From Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, our 11-year-old pianist in that performance was Daniel Song. He played Liszt's Transcendental Etude No. 7, otherwise known as the Pink Panther Etude. Da-da-da-da. Actually, also known as, a.k.a. the Eroica Etude, and a very heroic performance indeed. Daniel, is this one of your favorite pieces to play?
Right now, it's my favorite piece, but when I grow up and I play more pieces, I'll think about which one is my favorite, so maybe I'll choose when I retire.
Yeah. Good plan. I gotta say, though, this sets the bar pretty high as far as not only great performances, but, you know, really great. I mean, I don't know anybody who makes the piano ring as well as Franz Liszt does, and you really have a handle on getting this wonderful, magnificent sound out of the instrument. But meanwhile, as concentrated as you are on the piano, Daniel, I understand when you grow up, you could see yourself doing three completely different things professionally. Okay, so piano is one of them. What else would you do?
Well, I would like to be a doctor and a professional athlete, but my main job when I grow up is probably to be a pianist, mm-hmm. because I'm so used to the crowd. And yeah. And I like to let people enjoy my music.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your life as an 11-year-old athlete. I mean, this is not just pipe dream. You're already a competitive swimmer. Is that correct?
Yes.
You qualified for, I guess, districts in East Pennsylvania?
When I won my YMCA, I qualified for the East Pennsylvania district time, so I got to compete with other YMCAs, so it was fun to compete with other people and to see where I rank in.
And you play baseball. What's the appeal for baseball? Is it, I mean, I guess a team dynamic a little bit?
When I play baseball, we're in a team, so we compete against other teams, and I think a team is important so many people on that team can gather up their determination to give their best mm-hmm. shot, and it'll be, like, interesting to see if the teammates work together well.
They pull together, yeah. How do you know that you might want to be a doctor in addition to all this?
When I visit Korea, not every summer, but when I go there, my grandfather's a doctor, so I watch him work, and he inspired me, so I like to help people sick. It'll be fun and interesting to work together with other doctors to make people better.
I like the idea of your acknowledgement of the specialization. I myself, as host of this program, am sort of an amateur anesthesiologist, I like to think. Don't laugh so hard. Okay. See, but Daniel, I don't think you should have to choose between being a doctor or a professional athlete or a concert pianist. Think big, my man. Why not do all three?
Dr. Song, shall I close?
Yes, nurse, that'll be a great help. I have a doubleheader for starting in an hour.
May I say, doctor, that was magnificent work.
Song, hey! Hey, Song!
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Daniel, how does it feel to hit your 17th home run this season so early in the year?
You know, I couldn't be having the year I'm having without my team. They're the best.
Yeah, well, so far your season has Hall of Fame written all over it.
This is the most incredible performance I've ever heard.
Nobody's played the Transcendental Etudes this well since John Tesh.
Thank you very much. Good night.
See, that'd be an amazing day. All in a day's work for you, huh, Daniel?
We'll be a little busy, but...
You work on that.
Yeah.
And everything seems to be coming your way. I mean, mm-hmm. that list was extraordinary, and being with you and hearing you talk about it. You're a very wise young man. Anyways, and you play the piano wonderfully well. Thanks for being with us, Daniel. And thanks to Chelly Smith, our teen staffer, for adding to that sketch.
I'd
podcasts of From the Top are available every week at npr.org/podcasts. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Now, everybody, please welcome an outstanding 15-year-old trombonist from Lexington, Kentucky, and he's another recipient of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award, Joseph Hudson. Joseph, welcome. I love this story about you having no idea that the person you were studying with was actually a person who really inspired you to take up the trombone in the first place. How do you explain that?
Actually, in the fifth grade, every kid in my family chooses an instrument to play in the band. And my brother had already been playing trumpet for a few years. And
we played together, brother Caleb, right?
He appeared twice on From the Top.
Yeah.
But he put on a CD of a brass quintet, and it was called Fire Dance. And I really liked the trombone sound in that CD, so I chose the trombone because of it. And then I went to Interlochen this past summer and studied with Mark Hetzler, who was a trombonist in the Empire Brass Quintet. I had no idea at the time, though. And when I got home from Interlochen, I pulled that old CD out, and I looked on the cover. I saw a face in the background, and I was like, that looks like Mark.
That's the man.
Yeah.
And you were studying with him. Tell everybody about the piece you're going to play to end our show.
I'll be playing Thoughts of Love by Arthur Pryor. Arthur Pryor was a trombonist in John Philip Sousa's band, and he wrote many solos that he played with him. He was really world-renowned, and he wrote lots of pieces like Bluebells of Scotland, famous things like that, and I'm going to be playing Thoughts of Love.
So it's a real trombone piece written by a real trombonist. What other sort of trombone things do you get out of this piece?
Well, most trombonists, you know, try and get away from the trombone sound because I guess musicality and stuff, you really need that, and you get that from other instruments a lot. But, I mean, since you start late with the trombone, a lot of times you don't get that, so...
You're just blasting it out. It's hard to get those wonderful niceties and nuances that you get in this piece.
But this piece is a trombone piece.
Yeah, very stylish. Can't wait to play this with you. But first, I want to say thank you, Cleveland! I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Joseph, let's take center stage and take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. The music producer is Tom Veneri, and the tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with lighting by Tori Sweetser. Our technical director is Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.